And now, it's time for the Freedom Fiends Agenda live call-in show. Have you swallowed too much of the state's poison? The Freedom Fiends will stick their fingers down your throat and hold your hair back while you hurl. Call in before they get droned, right now, live on Freedom Fiends Radio.
Yo, it's the Fiends, the Freedom Fiends Agenda. This is also our live Thursday concert. It's on Fiends Radio only. No more Adam Curry. I decided to take that spice out of my life.
Now it's
Freedom Fiends.
Nima.
Hey, baby.
Nima. Yeah. Was that intentional?
Was what intentional?
That.
I didn't hear anything.
You didn't hear anything? You didn't hear it getting louder and louder and echoing until it was painfully loud and hurt everyone's ears?
Oh, I guess I did. I was talking the whole time.
You were.
I didn't know that. No, I did not hear that.
We lost you at the word Adam. Nothing you said was heard after that, if you'd like to repeat it all.
No, don't want to repeat any of it.
Yeah.
Fuck you guys. You guys can just take that.
Are you trying to get that all out before we get on radio?
Nope, I got it all out last time. This is new.
Yeah, we're going to be on radio.
I guess.
I guess. Why do you say I guess?
Because whenever you start the show with a criticism of me, then I get bitter and angry, and I want to hate everybody.
Really? No, see, here's my tip, my pro radio tip. When I said, once I explained what happened, you should have waited till I said what happened, and then be like, yeah, I did that intentionally. Wasn't that cool? I planned that, man.
Yeah.
I'm going beyond the bounds of radio. I don't care if I break everyone's radio. That's what I'm trying to do.
Yeah, I totally should have done that.
You should have
done
that.
I'll do that next time.
Yeah. So let me try it again. Nima, was that intentional? Ah,
fuck
God.
Yeah. Screw you guys. I did that on purpose. I hope it hurt the fuck out of your ears. I hope they're bleeding and you have to get tissue paper to wipe it all up.
I just want
to
make some eardrums bleed.
I hope you have to wear ear tampons for the rest of the day.
What's a mic condom? I heard you're using a mic condom today.
Oh, so straight from ear tampons to mic condoms? It's a windscreen, but it's like it goes over, you know, the head of your microphone, so it's like a condom. And
yeah.
With the Shure SM58, I loved it because I thought I didn't need one, and, you know, it sounded fine with that one, except when I get poppy, which I guess I do.
Yeah,
when
you really, you're really poppy, man. Really poppy on the last, not really poppy, but consistently poppy throughout the entire show.
It's pop radio. I like to touch the ball of the microphone with my lips.
In special places. Mine tastes like cat hair, so I don't do that. My cats like to rub on mine.
Yeah.
Because I let cats into the studio. You don't. I feel you can't really make good radio without cats in the studio.
No. No pussy in the studio. It's too distracting. No, really, it's because my cats, I'm worried that they're going to knock something over and ruin everything, which they would because they seem to ruin everything else in every other part of the house. So the only room they're not allowed in is my studio. No cats. Sorry.
Well, you know who used mic condoms nonstop? I was watching a documentary last night about Bob Marley, the Rasta reggae man. Yeah. All the footage of him in the 70s, everybody on stage had a mic condom on, no matter where they were on stage or in what studio or whatever. They were all using, even in the studio, they were using dynamic mics with pop condoms on them.
Yeah, well, I guess reggae has to be as smooth as possible, though. So
There you go. You know, I went and read about Rastafari last night. It's kind of mind-blowing.
As a religion or as a philosophy?
As the religion. It's got, like, more rules than Islam. It's really bizarre.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, rules, like, specific prescriptions for what you're supposed to do throughout your daily life?
Yeah.
Like, how you should wipe your ass and
how you should trim
your pubes?
They use Jewish dietary rules, and basically, it's all about health, and the idea is that you're going to live everlasting in the same body for eternity, and their Jesus incarnate is Haile Selassie One, Haile Selassie I, they call him, not one, not first.
Selassie I.
Yeah, Selassie I, who was, you know, I don't get the connection between like Jamaica and Ethiopia, but he was the, you know, all the colors that they wear, I always thought were the colors of the Jamaican flag. The Jamaican flag is kind of bland looking. No, it's the colors of the Ethiopian flag. But they believe that that Western civilization is Babylon and that Zion is in Africa, and they all want to return to Africa. Marcus Garvey is one of their prophets, you know, the he was a Black Panther prophet too, sort of, but like an actual prophet.
Back to Africa movement, didn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
Like that, he wanted to recolonize the Dark Continent.
Yeah. But yeah, they're Zionists for Africa, but they actually believe that they are the true true children of Israel, and that the Jews are not.
Black Jesus and all that.
Yeah, I really like the I really like that they call Western civilization Babylon, and in particular the police they call Babylon, and actually that's become like slang in England, you know, among like white thugs or whatever. Like they call the police Babylon too because of cross contact with Jamaicans. But I like that. So today's, and they use the word,
of course, they mean Babylon as a derogatory term, as in the Babylon of the Bible, which was
the horror Babylon.
The city where all the horrible, immoral things happened, because they followed the city's rulers instead of following the word of God.
Yep. So, and they use the word politricksters for politics and politicians.
Yeah.
So I want to call today's episode Politricksters and Babylon. Even though I don't want to talk
why
about
why not Politricksters of Babylon?
Well, because I'm thinking of Babylon as the police, not as the Western civilization. Because I kind of like Western civilizations, but to me, the police are Babylon.
What do you like about Western civilization, and what don't you like about Western civilization?
I really like looking out my window of my little windowless bunker here in Wyoming.
And that's a Western civilized.
There's this thing that I have about. No, it could be anywhere, but there's this thing about looking at the sky, especially like through trees, you know, like where there's some trees in my view, that really always reminds me of being a little kid. And I have these almost like psychedelic spiritual connections with moments I had as a kid, like memories of, it's kind of me now talking to me then. And the common denominator, no matter where I am, is looking up at the sky, especially through trees, especially like bare trees in the fall or winter. Especially in the fall. And I have this connection of like reaching back into the past to me as a child, like as if that's a different person, and having a conversation with that person. And it's two way. You know, I wrote that chapter in User's Manual for the Human Experience, Letter to a Young Me. And that's kind of a personification, or an exemplification, an example, a picture of that conversation. And today I want to talk about anything but the government, and talk about us as kids and us now.
Okay.
What you got?
it's your topic. What do you got first?
Well, I have, there's a lot of memories from when I was a kid, and I think most people might be like this. I don't know what's in most people's heads, and I never listen to other people, so I don't know. And I'm not on Facebook anymore, so my communication is entirely one way with the world. I don't listen to anything anybody says back, you know. I just put this out there, and it gets more and more popular. And
that's not true. That's not true, like, because you hear back from all the comments. You're always responding to comments. I guess much less so since you don't have Facebook anymore.
No, I have a guy that does that for me.
Yeah, but you still have... Oh, you have a guy.
I'm
so
kidding.
The Michael Dean that responds in the blog and the chat, it's not really you.
Dude, the Michael Dean that writes to you isn't even me.
Oh, wow.
I don't have
so
time
are you?
For that. I'm Michael Dean.
Who
the guy
are you,
that talks.
Son?
The guy that talks is Michael Dean. But no, every communication that anyone gets on Twitter or email from me isn't even me. I'm kind of kidding. But... wouldn't that be nice? Wouldn't that be nice if you could just be like Politricksters, you know, and just have someone answering for you, sending out form letters?
I guess.
I mean, I guess it could get to the point where there's like, you know, I mean, a lot of the emails that I send to people are answering the same things over and over and over. I mean, there's probably like 50 or 75 things I ever say to people. Couldn't we just automate that with a bot that just looks for keywords in there?
That's a good idea. You know. Get some of your programmer friends on that.
Yeah,
have them automate a Michael bot.
I will. Michael bot 3000. I'm Squirrel Master 3000 today. And what's your name? DJ Lova?
DJ over 9000. You're putting an imaginary L there. Use your eyes, Michael.
Nima Vidati lives and loves in Austin, Texas. That's from the
DJ,
bio I'm writing.
It's the letter D, the letter J, the letter O, the letter V, E, R.
I'm DJ Lover. I'm the lover of DJ.
You are. You love your DJ.
Yeah. That's my wife. What did you say about your wife when we were starting out today? Oh, she just wants you to make love to you and then make love to her and then turn into a pizza?
No, she wants me to turn into a body pillow.
A body pillow. Come to bed. Stop creating. Whereas my wife's just my wife's asleep. Like I'm awake like 9 hours after she falls asleep. You gotta get your wife working again, and she'll be not wanting to sleep as much. Well, she'll want to sleep more.
Yeah. Well, she's gonna be a stay at home wife once we have a baby, so she's kind of reluctant to.
So she's practicing now. Well, you can have a kid soon. You can't have a kid soon. I won't allow it. No, I won't allow it.
Why?
You hope so. What? Is it that hard? Babies just happen, man. You don't have to plan them.
Is that how it works?
Yes.
You got to make sure that it is in the womb correctly, you know, and that it grows up right. So babies don't just happen.
I had a dream last night that I was...
Bad babies just happen.
I had a dream last night that I was hanging out with my friend Eddie, who's been dead for like 10 years. It was really strange. Really strange. And then I woke up with a boner, but not because of him. Because there was this... Yeah. Because I was like single and 21, and there was this weird chick in my dream.
Yeah. And then I woke up with a boner is probably my new favorite non sequitur. And then I woke up with a boner. That's what I'm going to say after when I want to change the topic.
Were we talking about politricksters or
you know,
being
young? You said you don't want to talk about the government. You want to talk about your boner.
Yeah. Now I want to talk about being young and don't even connect those. I want to talk about being like 7 and talking to me now. I don't know. When I was a kid, like a lot of what I did and a lot of what I thought existed in my own head. Were you like that?
What do you mean existed in your own head? Like you used your imagination a lot?
I was my own imaginary best friend. No, not, I didn't use my imagination a lot. I mean, not probably more than a lot of smart kids, but, I constantly kind of had a running dialogue with myself in my head.
Ah, yeah, I did that too. There was a show called Herman's Head. Do you remember it?
Yeah, really it was a good premise. I didn't like the show, but it was
good.
Yeah,
the execution
premise.
Was bad, but I really liked the premise, and I always thought of that in my head, that there were competing entities, like competing personalities in my head.
Yeah.
Not like I'm schizophrenic or anything, but like when I was a kid, I remember my inner dialogue would always be we instead of I. Like, we need to go do this stuff. We need to go to bed. We need to brush our teeth.
Yeah, I didn't have I did have sentences in my head and conversations, but they weren't necessarily always in sentence form, except when I was like kind of narrating it, knowing that I would lead a great life later, and I was kind of like writing my biography 40 or 50 years early.
Like you could hear the older you narrating it, like it was what's that show with Whitney? And the guy
who
later did
but it was kind of like me as a kid and me as an adult inside my kid's head, that my kid head, but like with God, but the God was kind of like me, like, you know, like all actually that kind of ties into the politricksters in Babylon and Zion and rock and roll. I mean, Rastafari, they use the word I and I instead of I or me. Mm-hmm. And yeah. I and I is a kind of complex construct. It's basically, you and God and the God spirit in you with the person that you're in the room with, or the person you're, you know, I and I means we, but it's not me and Nima. It's me and Nima and God and the Godhead between us that makes us all one person.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Deep, yeah. Man. So tell me more about you as a little kid.
Me as a little kid? Well, what do you want to know?
I don't know, man. Someone wants to know if I'm talking to the squirrels yet. I don't talk to squirrels. I talk to cats though. And I kind of look at them like, what are you doing to me? Why are you looking at me like this? What's going on? Because one of my cats has kind of an adversarial relationship with me. Fuzzy, just kind of like later in the day, as the day goes on, he gets more attuned to like sitting next to me or being near me. But in the morning when I get up, he looks at me like a monster who's come to eat him. I mean, I walk into the room where he is and he looks at me like, what are you doing? And I come over and try to pet him and he runs away. And he's even like that with DJ, and it's DJ's cat. You know, it's the one, it's her cat and Peanut's kind of my cat. But, you know, I think they were abused as kids. Like when we got them, they were either abused or ignored for their first 6 months and they were really scared. Like when we got them, the first time we had sex, like they thought we were eating each other and they were terrified. They didn't know what to do.
Is that what it looks like when you have sex?
Maybe to
like
a cat.
Eating your partner? Maybe to a cat.
Yeah, well, they'd never seen that before.
Mm, well, you weren't doing it kitten style then.
Kitten style. I like that. So someone said there's no chat room in Gitmo. Hmm. Nima Fiend's on the chat room. Nima Fiend is
I am
DJ over 9,000.
Yeah.
So tell me, when did you start feeling this way? Tell me about your childhood.
When did I start feeling like a DJ?
I don't know. No. Now, tell me more about like how you saw the world and built your own world when you were a kid, and if you had a connection then with you now.
I still feel like I have a connection between then and now. Like, I don't really separate the two. Like, I felt like I'm the same consciousness as I was when I was five. I have more knowledge, but I still feel like it's me. I don't know. I always felt like it's me. And when I was a kid, I wanted the future to come fast because, you know, I fantasized about what I'd do when I grew up and not living with my parents and how great it would be. And
I know.
And yeah.
You know what? One of my biggest fantasies when I was a kid was that someday I'd have a radio show from my house, literally. That was one of my biggest goals when I was a kid. I mean, I had other goals like...
From your house? It was that specific?
Yeah, because I was into... I was very aware of like shortwave radio and ham radio when I was a kid. And I've talked about how I used to build little... micro FM transmitters that could transmit like, you know, 100 yards or something. And I built one into the headset of an old telephone, and I'd walk around my neighborhood talking into it. And I felt like I was talking to God. I felt like I was talking to the sky, to the trees, to these things I'm looking at right now and feeling like I'm looking at the same sky. You know that song, I see the moon and the moon sees me. Mm-hmm. The moon sees somebody I want to see. My mother used to sing that as a lullaby to me.
Lullaby.
And that always kind of like really struck me that like, you know, somebody else is looking up at the same moon as me. And there's a Tom Waits song about that too.
It's also a Fievel song, and Fievel Goes West, I think, or the one before that.
What's that?
The little animated mouse. It was a big, big animated show when I was a kid.
Yeah, so I guess it's a universal idea, or it's a, you know, collective unconsciousness idea, and
that you can bounce your love off the moon; it'll bounce back.
Yeah, and we're going to be on the radio.
It is a satellite. I guess the moon is a satellite.
Yeah, and we're going to be on AM radio, which actually leaks out into space, so people are going to be able to hear us on other planets soon.
Yes, yes. Although that's not the bouncing back effect we're talking about.
No, that's going, and it never stops. Yeah.
Yeah. Never, ever, 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 ever.
Some squirrel is looking up at the same moon as me.
When I was a kid, I guess what comes through from my early childhood was more my fears than other things.
Now we've
and
really
my fears of the metaphysical. Like, I had a deep fear of that God was constantly monitoring my thoughts, like the NSA.
I had that too, and but it was the devil. I was afraid of the devil.
Well, see.
That's how society poisons kids, you know.
I guess I don't talk about it a lot, but I was kind of raised Catholic. Like, it wasn't hardcore. Like, my mom wasn't obsessed with it, and we didn't like light Jesus candles and have a Jesus dying on the cross anywhere in our house. But I went to Catholic Sunday school, and I went to Catholic church, and I remember thinking that
nuns are sick fuckers, man. They really are.
Well, sometimes there's a Louis episode about his experience, which is some really sick stuff happens. The preacher from Hell on Wheels also plays this this lawyer who comes to talk to the Catholic Sunday school class in the Louis episode.
Lawyer because, for God, yeah.
Because
preacher's a lawyer for God,
pretty much. Well, the nun didn't think they understood enough how much Jesus suffered, so. This lawyer for God comes in, and it's the same guy who plays the guy from Hell on Wheels, the preacher there who goes insane. And he picks up one of the kids, and he sort of does a mock killing of Jesus on the kid and, like, explains in gruesome detail, like, right to the kid's face where the horrible stuff happens. And then he has Louis come up, because Louis is kind of rolling his eyes. He has Louis come up, and he hands him a nail and a hammer and says, go on, do it. Do it for Jesus. Stab this guy in the hand with the nail, you know? That's what Jesus would have wanted, and really... Oh, spoiler alert. Well, I'll let you guys watch the show, but yeah, it's a great episode. But
I like how you say spoiler alert after the spoiler.
Yeah, well, because in the chat room somebody said spoiler alert.
Show me on the doll where Jesus touched you, Billy.
When Jesus touched you. Yeah, and it completely screws up Louis, and he thinks it's all his fault that Jesus died. I didn't really get into that, but I did have this fear. For some reason I thought that I guess isn't that the thing that God is all-knowing, that God is omniscient. And when I would pray, part of me would always try to sabotage it. I felt like there was a part of my brain that was trying to say, you know, God damn it, fuck God, fuck God, fuck God, while I was trying to pray. And so then I'd have to stop that part of my brain and say, I'm sorry, God, please ignore that. So I always had this constant worry that some part of my brain was betraying God and betraying me, and that God would punish me for it. And I was kind of scared. Scary.
Show me on the doll where the state touched you, Billy. I'm putting that in my show notes for our radio promo. That's a good one. Yeah.
But I guess now I feel like my head space is my private property, and it's so well fenced off from anybody else that I don't really have to worry about that kind of stuff. And if there is some kind of omniscient thing that can hear what I'm saying, some kind of metaphysical NSA, I don't really feel like there's anything I could do about it if it had evil intentions. And if it doesn't, if it's just neutral, then why care about it? So more of a stoic response NSA. To it nowadays.
The metaphysical NSA. Boy, that's you know, going back to the moon, looking up at the moon thing, I think that there's some kind of primal in your DNA connection with looking up at the moon and looking up at the sky, because back in primitive times, pre-science, you know, when they'd make up things to describe gods,
they all wanted explanations for how the world worked, and
yeah,
so they just, whoever could come up with the most intriguing story, yeah, is usually what won out in a specific
society. But the moon and the sun and the sky are like the most obvious kind of metaphysical seeming objects, right, in the person's average day.
There's nothing you can do to get there.
You know, the bison was controlled by the bison spirit, but you could actually kill it and cut it open and eat it. You know, you can't do that to the moon. You can shoot all the arrows you want at the moon. And I guess it takes a bunch of stolen tax money to actually get an arrow to the moon.
It's something you can see but can never touch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Although, you know, they claim that they did it, but they really did it on a soundstage in Burbank. They touched God on a soundstage in Burbank.
Do you think that?
No.
Do you think the moon landing was fake?
No. I don't know. No, I absolutely don't. And, you know, it could be just that as a kid, I wanted to believe in that so strongly. And it was one of the early bonding moments of my father and I was watching that. And I was really into science before that. I wanted to be a scientist until I was about 12 or 13 and started masturbating. And then I wanted to be a rock star. But throughout the whole thing, I wanted to have a radio show. And there
put a marker there, because we got to use that for a radio promo.
I'm
wanted
thinking,
to be a scientist until I started masturbating. I'm thinking, wanted to be a rock star.
I'm thinking most of this cast is going to end up somehow in our promo, at least my end of it. Okay. Hey, you got some good stuff in there too.
At least my end of it. Yeah. Yeah. Good job.
At least my end of it. I know.
So I'm just a little more awesome than you.
Well, your name is going to be first in the show name for some reason. Just because it rolls off the tongue better. Unless I just really like wake up one morning and go, no, and just hammer into you that it's not going to be that.
When you wake up in the morning with a boner.
When I wake up in the morning with a boner, wanting to be a scientist with a radio show who is also a rock star. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was this table. Okay. My room that I grew up in was my brother's room when he was a kid. Because my brother is like 24 years older than me or something. I mean, I was definitely an accident. And, you know, I asked my mother about this when I was a kid. I was like, was I planned? And she said, she looked kind of thoughtful and said, you were conceived and raised in love, which is a nice way of saying.
A nice diversion. Yeah.
I kind of like started thinking about it when I was 10 or 11. And I noticed that, you know, I was 10 and my brother had already graduated from college and my sisters were in college, and I was, you know, one was graduating and one was, I mean, I was like, what's going on? Wait, why are these adults my siblings? You know, I'm actually, I noticed that when I was 5 when they were graduating from high school and college, but
yeah.
So there was this table in my brother's room. It was kind of like, it was this Formica thing that was on some cables that like you could push up against the wall and latch, and then you could lay it down, and it was about 4 feet by 4 feet, kind of Formica, about 2 inches thick, that my brother had built as like a study table. And I used to do my electronics on that. And I had this idea of like the table being able to allow me to communicate with the world somehow. And basically what I was envisioning was the table I have in front of me. It's got a bunch of computers and sound equipment on it, you know, like before that existed or before that was possible to do from your home. Mm-hmm. I really was. I was like, someday I'll have a table like this with a bunch of electronics on it and a microphone, and I'll be able to communicate with the world.
So Michael doesn't talk to people. Michael's table talks to people.
Yeah. Yeah. And I am just the vocalizations for the table, I guess. Speaking through the ages, bouncing off the moon and out into outer space and into the cerebral cortex of every fiend on this planet and beyond.
See, I always took the opposite tack. I was always thinking that every tool I use is nothing but that. It's just something that my brain puts into another bigger, larger piece so that my whims can be existent in the universe. Kind of like how one of the things about that Ayn Rand book that I read, Atlas Shrugged. Well, there's some good things in it. I mean, I didn't even read the whole thing. My cat took a dump on it, so I stopped reading it.
And it's the only copy in the world, so you can't read more.
Well, I never got into it.
I just say you. Let me do a parenthetical here. I say you because she has nothing about the non-aggression principle. I mean, her whole thing is about government staying out of business. Really?
That's not what DJ says.
DJ's read all the stuff like five times.
Quote about it.
Okay.
Well, let's clear this up before I go into talking about her more.
So you look at
there's a YouTube of her explaining the non-aggression principle. Should I play it? On Donahue.
Sure. Yeah.
All right.
I know it's a long one though.
No, it's a minute 39. Let me.
All right.
Yeah, the audio should be fine. It's not going to be the best.
So while you cue that up. I got the echo now.
Yeah, you got the echo. I was about to play it.
Go ahead.
Definition is very simple and objective. Anyone who will enforce any idea or prejudice by physical force, anyone who initiates the use of force against another human being, in that instant is acting like a dictator. And if he establishes that as a political system, then that's a dictatorship. But I'm the arch enemy of physical force.
Right.
I'm for the freedom of the mind and for bringing people to your ideas by persuasion, by force.
Could you bring your moral perceptions and principles to a meeting in 1917, 1920, 22 to assassinate the Tsar?
Why assassinate him? He fell, you know, by a bloodless revolution.
But you don't know that. You didn't know that at the time. Well, you're armchair quarterbacking now. I'm asking you, in the Dietrich Bonhoeffer sense, could you plot to overthrow a person that you thought was obviously, in your mind, denying civil rights to other people?
Plot against him, certainly. But I always said you should. You have the moral right to retaliate with force if someone imposes force on you.
So you're for self-defense?
Oh, yes. But not murder. That is a profound difference.
But when the underground people in Germany started meeting and saying, let's knock off Hitler, that's morally acceptable.
Oh, totally.
Just checking.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
If you like tranny hookers and shooting crocodile, tune in to freedomfiends.com.
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
I like her accent, and you're right. I didn't know about that, but I like her accent. It says like it sounds like she's saying, you know, anyone is morally right in no one is morally right in initiating sports. It sounds like she says instead of force.
Well, I just can't believe watching this that this was daytime television.
I know.
20 years ago.
I know, and really,
like, it was an actual debate about philosophy.
I know,
and the
I
root
know.
Of it. It wasn't, you know, people throwing chairs at each other.
What show was
they
that
knocked
on?
Up their sister.
Phil Donahue.
Yeah, Donahue.
Yeah,
I mean,
and later
he was kind of imposing
later,
the TV, like he was all up in her face. You can't see it because this is audio.
I know.
It was like he was yelling at a little old lady. But
later
like,
he basically turned into the beginning of people throwing chairs at each other by the end of his run.
Mm. Was it his show or
no,
was it people
it was
trying
his,
to compete?
It was
with
his
him?
Show. It was. Yeah, I mean, it was. He had the names of the day on, and her book. She'd put out a new book at that point, and you know, her editor or her publisher got her on the Donahue show. You know, the guest before her was probably OJ Simpson, and the guest after her was probably, you know, Senator Richard Nixon talking about how he's gonna run for president or something.
It was the '90s.
Yeah. OJ Simpson and Senator Richard Nixon.
Senator Richard Nixon back from his retirement.
Yeah.
Back from his obscurity from resigning from presidency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I found out something the other day that made me happy.
Hold on. That was an aside because we wanted to get to the other point.
Yeah, but we can go in multiple layers of asides here. Who's the guy that runs Halliburton that was the vice president?
It was Dick Cheney. I don't think he runs it anymore. I think he might still be on their board.
But. He's actually not from Casper, Wyoming. He grew up here, but he's from Nebraska. So I can feel better about living in Casper, Wyoming now. He wasn't whelped here.
Yeah, but Wyoming has taken him as his own. People think they associate him with Wyoming. Like my uncle the other day was like, he put Wyoming on the map. And I was like, he's not a cartographer.
I'm not listening. I don't want to hear this. So did you look at tools as... like all your tools, did you look at them as like extensions of your mind, like say the same way that like a fulcrum makes your arm stronger, your computer makes your brain smarter? Is that what you were going for?
In the book, Atlas Shrugged, you know, a lot of it is about a train mogul, and she thinks of the train as something like a passage in a book from an author. The train is nothing but the ideas of a man put into practice. And so she looks at the wheels turning and she just thinks of that as a musical phrase. You know, that would be the analogy. It's something that came from somebody's mind and now exists in the world. And so that's the way I always thought of stuff like that in media, is it's just something from that gets from my mind that somebody can see, hear, feel, or whatever. And the things I use to make that media are just like the ink and the pen and the paper or the piano.
That's beautiful. You know, it's interesting that she used a train as the analogy in that book. And seeing the movie, it kind of seemed dated. You know, it wasn't dated when that book was written. That book was written in what, 58, 60, something like that?
A long time.
You know, when trains were still, like when I was a kid, before I wanted to be a scientist, until I was about six, I wanted to be a train engineer, train conductor. And my dad used to bring
trains,
me down
really? You were into
to
trains?
Watch. Yeah. He used to bring me down to watch the trains. And I used to have this little plastic toolkit of plastic tools and I'd bring it and I'd say, well, if the train breaks down, I can fix it. And so it was, you know, but then I wanted to be a radio personality, and that's going to happen starting next month. And I can't wait. I can't wait, man, to be on real radio. I want it to happen tomorrow, today.
Yeah.
And I think I'm going to cut our whole promo out of today. It's so good. It's so good. Okay. It's so philosophical. And then I'll just add in something about worms and something about the non-aggression principle and something about Jenkeman tranny hookers.
And something about we'll squirms. Set.
Squirms. Yeah. Squirrel worms. It's a squirm, you said, is the result of the marriage of squirrel on worm marriage.
Yes, yes.
We did you see the picture yet?
A picture of a squirm.
No, look at the squirm. There's a squirm on Freedom Fiends. Look at it. It's actually a picture of Fuzzy and I photoshopped off his head.
I don't know if Fuzzy
like,
can do a squirm justice, but I'll look.
Yeah, you can look. So I really like where we're going with all this, but it was interesting that Ayn Rand and her initiation of sports ideology, that she used a train because, and you think about a train too, it's like, it's in It's in the DNA. It's like part of the blood. It's the veins of a country. You know, it's not a factory somewhere, and it's not a concept, and it's not a book, and it's the thing that like it's literally connects the country, you know?
Yeah.
And her thing, like owning the train is owning the means better than the means of production. It's like the means of shipping around the country, you know? And now like the trains are pretty much all taken over by the government in one way or another. And that was one of the first things they really took over.
Ah, it's a great example of how the government is a cancer, right? Because the way it spreads is through these means of transportation. Through the railways.
Through the lymph nodes of the nation.
Yes. So if the government controls the transportation, then they can control the whole of that geographic area, the whole of that society.
Yeah.
And if you look at how bad our government's gotten, is its cancerous cells block our transportation at various points along the cardiovascular system. I mean, try flying, try driving. You know, you have checkpoints, you have Viper, you can't even take a bus. You get stopped by men with machine guns.
You know,
and I bet the liberals love that. They're like, oh, I love it when the TSA comes around with their giant assault weapons. It makes me feel so safe.
And I'm looking out the window at these trees, and they're kind of vein-like structures. Now that they're barren, I can see them, and they kind of look like lymph node system, or you know, part of the renal system, or you know, the singer Bjork, who's absolutely batshit crazy, but really kind of smart and funny. She said something one time about like the reason that lingerie is loved by men around the world is that it has spider type patterns in it, and that's something that's in our DNA because that's the way the cellular structure and the vein structure works, and the brain and the synapses work.
The way lace, yeah. Well, it's that natural fractal sort of pattern, that order that comes from nature and natural attractors, rather than the very boxy triangles and squares and shapes like that come out of men's brains.
Squares, good word. I mean, squares. You think about it too. It's like the government is square, regulation is square, trying to control natural order is square. It's really bizarre to me too that a lot of Christian conservatives are conservative in the sense of wanting, you know, in the neocon sense of wanting to control every area of humanity when they are absolutely sure that things evolved spontaneously, not evolved, but like were created spontaneously by God. So they're basically wanting to kick God off the throne and take it, you know, thanks God, we'll take it from here. You know,
we'll
control everyone
God
from now on.
It evolved spontaneously. Mostly they think God centrally planned it, but that makes your point even stronger, that they want to be the ones centrally planning things and keeping things the same.
Yeah.
You know, instead of letting God get away with his changes. I mean, if they think God
letting
really
God
has
get away with his changes,
really, if they think God really has his hand on the wheel, they should let go of the wheel.
They don't want God to get away with being God. They want to kick God off the throne. Yeah.
Right. And, Christian conservatives don't want God to get away with being God. I love that.
Yeah.
And it's really quite sad. But, you know, I really think it's because, like Ben Stone says, a lot of modern Christians or Christian conservatives that politicize it, their real God is the state. Their real God isn't Yahweh or Jesus or whatever. Their real God is
or Haile Selassie.
Or Haile Selassie.
Or Haile Salacious. I thought his name was Haile Salacious when I first heard it.
Did you? No, because you heard that in reggae songs. Asiai. Selassiei.
Selassiei. Haile Salacious. Yeah, I don't know. I my first real contact with reggae was living in Washington, D.C. in the early 80s. And there was kind of a crossover between the punk rock scene and the reggae scene. And they actually played shows together. They called them funky, punky reggae shows.
Would they play like actual reggae, like sort of down tempo and relaxed? Or was it more like ska, like sped up with?
No, it was more down tempo. There were the Bad Brains, who were a band that played both kinds of music. They played hardcore, like blistering, amazing hardcore. And they played reggae, like straight up reggae. And they were kind of controversial because they were, as a lot of Rastas are, they were extremely homophobic, and they had a few like, you know, kill the gay songs, like reggae tunes.
Ah, yeah. One of my favorite reggae songs, I must confess, is Boom Bye Bye by Buju Banton, which is boom, bye, bye, like shoot a faggot in the head. It's boom, bye, bye, and a batty boy, Ed. It's horrible, horrible, it's horrible. But it's like horrible. Such a pretty melody, and it's catchy, and you just get relaxed, and you want to smoke a fat joint.
You want to smoke a fat joint and shoot people?
I don't get how those two are compatible from the artist's level. I mean, in my mind, I'm just like, okay, this is a great melody, and that's what I'm enjoying here, and laughing at his bigotry, you know, from what I feel is a more enlightened state. But why in this religion where people, you know, and a lot of lefties embrace it too and are like, oh yeah, smoke pot and listen to
white rastas are hilarious, man.
But why the hatred of the gays in some sects or some parts?
Yeah, Bad Brains had a song called Don't Blow Bubbles, which I don't remember anything other than the title and that it was anti
bubbles, like a dude, like don't blow bubbles. <That's
true. laughs> Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Well, did you find that out? Did you find out why Rastafari? Is that like an ancient old world Ethiopian
thing? It's a biblical
thing,
man. I don't know, man. It really is. It's
like back to Leviticus kind of thing?
Yeah. Well, like I said, man, Rastafari has a lot of rules. You know, a lot of white potheads with dreadlocks who like the music, who don't know a lot about it and, you know, use a few of the terms like I and Ital for Vital and things like that.
But Lupe.
And Irie, which is good feelings. All right. It means all right. Yeah. You know, like they would not last a day in the actual practice of it. You know, it kind of reminds me of the movie about the Red Brigade, you know, the terrorists in Germany in the 70s, what they call the RAF. The Bader Meinhof syndrome.
The Royal Air Force.
No, but it was also the it was something else too. It was the Red Army faction. It was the Bader Meinhof syndrome is the name of the movie, and there's a scene in there that's based on reality where these, you know, German hippie leftist communist anarchists, violent terrorist types, like went to Jordan to train with, you know, with the terrorists of the day, the, you know, way pre
was it the PLO? Was it
it was the PLO. It was the PLO. The Red Army faction actually had some involvement in that 747 hijacking with the PLO. They did something in conjunction with each other in the 70s. Which you know, I mean, in the 70s, when I was a kid, like the idea of an Arab terrorist existed. You know, that was something in the national mind. Not like it is now. But yeah, I mean, we're still fighting the fight.
It was just lower on the list of things the government will use to scare you into obedience.
Yeah, but at the time, you know, the United States was already like financing some of them to fight the Russians in Afghanistan.
Oh, bringing the proto Al Qaeda over to the White House for dinner.
Yeah.
So that Ronald Reagan could take pictures of them and call them freedom fighters.
Right. Yep.
Which, but, I mean, I guess in a sense they were fighting occupation from the Soviet Empire, but when they're fighting occupation of the Anglo-American Empire, we don't call them freedom fighters, do we?
No. But there's a scene in there where they go to train with the PLO, and the German hippie terrorists do not dig it. Like, you know, the PLO are like, okay, the women sleep in this building, the men sleep in this building, and then like, you know, a week later, the women are sunbathing topless on the roof, and you know, basically the PLO ships them back to Germany.
Wow.
Yeah. It'd be like that, you know, American white Rastas actually trying to live by Rastafari for a day, you know. I mean, there's so many rules that, you know, it kind of makes Islam or Hasidic Judaism look like a party.
Right. Well, I feel like that's part of the sad thing about, you know, youth countercultures everywhere is sometimes they latch on to just some other culture somewhere else because they like an aesthetic of it. Yeah, they like the dreadlocks.
They like the pot.
The reggae, they like the pot. Or they, you know, people really like Indian culture too, so they'll like aspects of that. They'll like the Kama Sutra and stuff like that, and they'll get into that kind of mysticism. But I think, you know, with counterculture, you can embrace piecemeal things and aesthetics you like. If that's all we're talking about is what you like to put in your body and what parts of your body you like to put in what other parts of other people's bodies. I mean, you can just take that piecemeal and build your own culture. You don't need to actually go and follow the rules of Rastafari and hate gay people or join the PLO and fly to Jordan. You don't need to do that. You can still be counter, you know, the status quo and not take on the status quo of another geographical location.
Yeah, but I think it, I think in a lot of cases, it's really kind of, you know, just taking, it's kind of like pornography compared to actual sex. You know, it's just the picture of it. It's not the thing.
Mm-hmm. Right. Right.
Yeah.
Because then when people get into the actual thing, like you said, sometimes yeah. they're like, what?
Well, you know, the thing about pot, the thing about pot and Rastafari is that one of the main things that pot is used for in Rastafari is Bible study. You know, how many of those white kids want to smoke pot and then spend the day, spend 12 hours reading the Old Testament or reading the Coptic Bible, you know?
None of them.
None of them. They're like, okay, we'll just listen to the song.
And the Old Testament. Like, I just can't get into the Old Testament. I guess what I can't do is I can't understand why people look at the Old Testament and think about it with anything less than, oh my God, what the hell is wrong with this society? What the hell is wrong with this worldview that the person I'm supposed to worship is telling somebody to murder his own son?
Yeah.
I mean, that's a story in the Bible. That's like one of the major points of the Old Testament is God asking Abraham to murder his own son and then being like, haha, just joking. You don't really have to do that. I just wanted to make sure you would kill your own son for me.
Yeah. You know, another thing that, that a lot of people don't know about Haile Selassie is that he was actually pretty important in the formation and spread of the United Nations, of the proto United Nations, and
really
spreading the idea of the need for, what's the term where one country promises to fight for another country? Distributed protection or something like that. It's called, I forget, but it's, yeah, he, because Italy attacked, Ethiopia. And that's another, the Rastas actually will use the word Rome instead of the word Babylon sometimes for the evil empire, for the Western evil.
Because, of course, Ethiopia was had some colonial problems with the Italians.
Yeah. Yeah.
Huh. Wow.
Yeah. That's so if you like Rastafari, you want, you're a UN one worlder, basically.
But I don't think you have to be, because you can take it piecemeal. Just smoke pot and listen to Bob Marley. You'll be fine.
Somebody put a good point here on the chat room. There's a lot of inbreeding in the Old Testament.
Is there? I guess I always skipped over those parts of the begats, such and such, laid with such and such. Yeah, I skipped over those parts.
You couldn't see the Beatitudes for the begats, as it says in the AA book. He says that about, like, you know, how he was turned off to religion. He was like, I couldn't see the Beatitudes for the begats. Like, couldn't see the forest for the trees, you know. Basically, couldn't get through the dogma to get to the beauty of it.
Yeah.
So back to you as a child talking to you now. Here's the thing. I used to wonder when I was a kid if me at 40 or 50 – would like me at like 21. And that's why I wrote that chapter, Letter to a Young Me. That's me at 45 talking to me at 21 and kind of giving him advice. Yeah. And, you know, I think that the conclusion I came to was me at 21 would really like me at 45. Me at 45 would like spending short periods of time with me at 21 and would get kind of irritated with him.
Yeah, that's how I feel. I was kind of an asshole. Like, I look back on it and I did some mean things to people that I loved and friends of mine and even strangers.
Something you want to confess?
No, well, there were a lot of things. I mean, I was mean to some girls. Like, there was a girl I was supposed to go on a date with and take her to the movies and give her a ride in the movies and go to the movies with her. You know, I had met her in a party in the dark, and she looked cute. And then when I saw her, I didn't think she was cute enough. So I was like, "Yeah, just go get us tickets, and I'll park the car." And I just let her out of the car and just drove home. And I'm thinking back on that, I'm like, "Wow, I had no concern whatsoever for her feelings and how that would have made her feel like shit." And it just really saddens me now, and I can look back at it with empathy. But at the time, I had no sense of that.
See. Your concept of what was you being really bad, I'm kind of like, that's quaint, man. Because what I would do is do exactly that same thing, and then about 2 weeks later, be drunk and lonely and call her up and get her to come over and sleep with me. and admit, and I never lied back then. I was brutally honest to the point where it was far crueler than lying. You know, I'd be like, I'd call her up and be like, yeah, you know, I ditched you the other day because you're not that pretty, but I kind of thought about it. And, you know, you got a good personality and you're pretty good at licking things. So why don't you come on over?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, at least you're honest about it. See, I just ran away from it.
There was actually one girl who totally fell in love with me. This was when I was dating like 7 or 8 girls, and I had a list on my wall of them in descending order from prettiest to least prettiest to least pretty. And I would, when I wanted some company, I would go down the list, and whoever, you know, 3rd, 4th, 5th, whoever was home and willing, that's what I'd go with. And this girl was at the bottom of the list, and she knew it, and she fell in love with me harder than any of them. And I remember, she came into AA shortly after I did. And, I was kind of surprised to see her there, 'cause I don't think she really had a drug problem. I think she was either following me to AA by pretending to have a drinking problem, or, you know, did like basically, you know, did a bong hit and fell off her skateboard and landed in recovery without really hitting bottom. She was from Texas, and I remember her, she's a real sweet girl, but I remember her telling me one day after about 3 weeks of her being in AA, her telling me, I'm going back to Texas. I can't live in the same city with you. I wish you'd lied to me, but you didn't. And that makes it worse.
She was mistaken, though. I don't think you should have lied to her, and I'm glad you didn't.
Yeah, but it was a weird thing for someone to say to me. You know,
see, I wasn't always honest with people. I would lead people on and try to get what I wanted to get out of them, and I didn't really have a big universal conceptualization of what was right and what was wrong. And I feel like I do that more so now. But do you ever do that thing where you like look back on something you said 2, 3, 4 years ago, and you're like, ah? You know, I guess I see where I was coming at with that,
yeah.
But I feel so stupid. I feel like I was so much more ignorant then. And I guess that's good, because that means that you've progressed and that you feel like you are more enlightened than you were a few years ago.
Absolutely.
But then that also means that, you know, I worry that 4 years from now, and it probably will happen, 4 years from now, I might be listening to something I said or reading something I wrote and be like, oh, well, you know, I just completely missed this thing. You know, I missed this aspect of it. Why didn't I get that?
Yeah. Well, the real thing that's been a change for me is learning the non-aggression principle. And,
right.
You know, I guess I could say I wish I'd learned it 30 years earlier, but I kind of did. I mean, really, like when you're 5 in Sunday school, they teach you the golden rule, which pretty much is the non-aggression principle. But I never really internalized it and had a lot of guilt over it and was like, oh, am I doing unto others as they'd have to? And, you know, it gets really corrupted in the way it's taught to people. And it's not really anything like the non-aggression principle. It's more like, I mean, it gets used for things like, let the government steal a bunch of money to feed the homeless because Jesus fed the homeless by turning water into wine and loaves into fishes. You know, that's not Christianity, man.
Well, it's that main point that people don't get. And, you know, I spent all of my vacation in Salt Lake pretty much arguing with status, because that's what I do there, except when I'm with, you know, people like Frank, and I have some cousins and some friends there that are totally fiend listeners. And it's great to have this sort of home base of people. But, you know, when I talk to my dad or I have a very statist friend who's pretty much liberal, he doesn't love Obama. He's not an Obama humper, but he's pretty liberal. And, you know, I just feel like I spend the whole time arguing with them. And that's the point they miss. They miss that completely, is that voluntary point. And I try to drill it into their head that, no, it's not about what society does. It's about if society forces people into doing these things. It's about if there's guns being pointed at people. That's the main thing. So, I mean, we can have all the charity in the world. We can have all the welfare in the world, as long as it's all given freely and voluntarily instead of taken by force of arms.
And that's what 99% of all arguments of politics are, is yeah. Where to point the government gun and what
right.
So-called good to do with the monopoly of force.
Right. And the 2% that are outside of that are usually libertarians and anarchists trying to say, no, that's the wrong argument. That's the wrong distinction. It's not where to point the guns, but let's not point the guns. How about we stop pointing the guns?
Yeah. And they're really wanting to get rid of the citizen guns. So they're the only ones. The government's the only ones pointing guns.
Right. Yeah. Anarchists want to wear guns, but we don't want to ever point them.
Right.
We want to have them. We want to own them. We want to love them and pet them and stroke them. But right. We don't want to point them. The government wants to point them at people to keep them from having them, holding them.
And that's square. That's square of them. Completely they are very square.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's play some music.
Yeah, I need a little drink break here. All right. What should we play? An MWD song.
Why don't you play Letter to a Young Me? You probably don't have that handy, though.
It's on a disc somewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't have that.
It's okay. We don't need it. I've surmised it and surpassed it here.
Yeah, plus we want a song. We want something to as a break from our voices talking about things.
Yes. Muzak.
The Devil Is Us. Have we played that yet?
No, but it's a good one. The Devil Is Us. I mean, basically,
and it's long.
It was the first, like, the only the most political my band Bomb got. And Tony wrote most of the words, and it's basically about the U.S. government acting, being the devil by actions. And it says things like, you know, do not. It's basically about not caring about the lives of other people and how you destroy them. And it's saying the devil is us. And it's, I think we actually abbreviated it on set lists. The devil is you dot S dot.
Oh, nice. Nice. That's great. Okay. Yeah. Let's play that. And then we'll talk a little bit about that concept afterwards.
Cause yeah.
I think I've got some things to say about that concept. All right.
All right.
We're going to play that right here. Here you go.
Worms.
The devil is us. The devil is us. The devil is us.
Someone said very, very chill episode today. It's because we're not talking about the government much.
Yeah, I suppose so. We're not getting angry and yelling too much.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hold on just a second. Let me
turn
you up.
You're quiet.
Yeah. You're on delicious.
You're turning
dish.
Me up. You can't turn me up. You don't have the control. You can't do that. I control. With Free Talk Live, they're like, you control the show. And I'm like, with Freedom Fiends, we control the show. We don't let no one else control the show, man. Screw that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Someone said we'd get swatted these days for having a band called Bomb. Probably.
Swatted by who and how?
SWAT.
Swatted by the SWAT. Yeah, yeah. That's what they mean.
Okay. Man, there's a whole bunch of talk on the internet about what people are going to do if the government tries to take guns away. Basically, there's a bunch of people who basically like, we're going to start shooting, and if we can't get the targets we want, we're going to get the targets we can find. Which is, I don't want to be in that world. I don't want the government doing these things that make people want to do these things and feel right about it.
Yeah.
I just want to be left alone.
I don't want to live in that world either. I'm wondering, though, I was listening to Scott Horton the other day, and he was like, you know, any other issue like homeschooling or any of these things that the left hates, but there are a lot of people who like them. All that usually has to happen is for even a small group to make a political stink about it. I mean, there's like more guns than people in this country. I kind of feel like if people really wanted to, and if the left was really going hardcore on this, I mean, you don't think people could use the traditional means? You think it's that far gone that the president's going to sign a signing statement here or a executive order and just bypass
Here's what I think they're going to do. I don't think they're going to do outright confiscation. I think that would be Civil War II.
It'd be political suicide, too. I mean,
yeah.
That's always the worst issue for a Democrat is on gun control. That's always something in the past they've had to keep quiet about and just shut their damn mouth unless they're from San Francisco or L.A. Just shut up and don't talk about it because, you know, that's the thing that'll keep you from getting reelected.
Yeah.
I mean, Obama didn't say one word about it in his first term. And then literally,
well,
like...
He was also waiting, you know, and I also feel that there will probably never be another Republican president in America. The Republicans have blown it. And I think that if there is a Democrat president in America forever, which I think is going to happen, I think that the Republicans have written themselves out of relevance by going full on neocon and not embracing someone like Ron Paul or even the ideas of Ron Paul at all. You know, they do what they did what when it suited them, they did what the Rastas do, what the white Rastas do to Rastafari. You know, they picked the surface ideas of it and gave lip service to them while not actually doing the 12-hour Bible study, you know, that is required of Austrian economics that is necessary to really embrace Ron Paul.
Well, then, they only paid lip service to the ideas that the base liked. They never actually did things like keep taxes from getting higher or reduce the size of the government. They just talked about it.
Yeah.
They never actually did it.
Yeah. Yeah. Michelle Bachmann says that, you know, she likes to put on her G-MILF bikini and sit at the beach reading Rothbard, but she doesn't really. It wasn't Rothbard. It was Ayn Rand, wasn't it? No, what was it?
No, it was Mises. She said she likes to sit on the beach with Mises. And I don't know. That's not even a book on the beach, right? You
yeah.
read that in your study with a nice glass of brandy on the rocks. You don't read
yeah.
Mises on the beach.
Yeah. Someone's pointing out, man, there's some people who really follow our stuff well. Mark is pointing out, Mark in Canada is pointing out that just like the letter to the GOP you wrote. Yeah, 2 years ago. I wrote a letter, open letter to the Republican Party saying, if you don't run Ron Paul, you are going to never have a president from your party again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they not only didn't run Ron Paul, they marginalized him, they lied, and they changed the rules to make it impossible. So I think what's going to happen with guns is they're going to change the rules. They're trying to get rid of the filibuster possibility now. And this is kind of weird. Actually, the only person that's really consistent on the Second Amendment right now is Rand Paul. And we've bashed him a lot, but he's kind of stepping up to the plate with this. And he's like the only real resistance in the Senate. And, you know, what can one man do but throw some monkeys in the wrenches and make it take longer?
Well, here's the other thing, too, is I realized this the other day. One of the best things about Ron Paul leaving the Congress is now we don't even have that exception. We don't even say Congress all sucks except for one person. You know, there's one good congressman. I feel like we don't even have to do that anymore. Yeah, we can just completely dismiss them out of hand and just – and that's what needs to happen, right, is we just need to ignore them and stop thinking that they can fix anything, stop looking to them for guidance, and stop even following their rules and their edicts. I mean, I guess we have to the extent that we don't get shot and killed and maimed and swatted. But other than that.
Yeah. I mean, the NRA is meeting with Joe Biden today. It's already over probably. They met with him today and God knows what kind of who was the guy that met with Hitler to make things better for England?
Neville Chamberlain.
They're either going to be the Neville Chamberlain or the Quisling. You know, they're either going to be the great appeaser or the traitor. As
well, it's worse than Neville Chamberlain, right? Because Neville Chamberlain gave Hitler an appeasement on places that had nothing to do with England. Like he didn't say, Hitler, you can take, you know, Wales. Nobody likes Welsh people. He said, Hitler, you can have Poland, whatever. If you want that part of Poland that used to be part of Germany, go for it.
Yeah.
Or it wasn't even Poland because they gave Poland a war guarantee. Some other European backwater that I don't recall right now. You know, if the NRA makes a concession to Joe Biden, it's going to be like if Neville Chamberlain said, well, come on, you can have a
Scotland
in London. have Scotland.
Nobody likes Scotland anyway.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, that's going to be close to home if there's a concession there. That's not going to be something that doesn't affect everybody who owns a gun, you know, or most people who own a gun.
Yeah. What they're trying to do is divide and conquer the NRA, which has always been political suicide in the past. And I want to get the fuck off of this really quickly. We'll spend like 5 minutes on this, but we were having like one of the best episodes we've ever had.
Harshing my buzz, man.
We were having one of the best episodes we've ever had by not talking about the government for an hour. And I'd like to get back
there. Don't kill my vibe.
But we got to talk about this un-Irie situation in the politricksters of Babylon, in the swamp of Washington, D.C., full of the politics, the many bloodsuckers in Washington, D.C. Yeah.
Yeah, man. I say ignore them.
Here's what they're going to do. They're going to make it hard to get new guns. They're going to make it so you can't buy a gun at a gun show without a background check. They're going to make it illegal to do a private sale. They're going to make it so it's next to impossible to will your guns to anybody, and the government will come take them when you die. They're going to make it really hard to get ammo. And then they're going to just work on counter-education of teaching in schools and in their control of the media, which the CIA started in the 50s with Operation Mockingbird. They're going to just get more and more young people thinking guns are bad things. They're probably going to make it really hard to do things like the gun training from the non-aggression principle DVD. You know, they'll do something to me for doing that. And they will, you'll still have your guns, but it's going to be hard to practice with them. They're going to close gun, you know, places you can shoot. You know, gun ranges are going to be regulated and insurance regulated out of the business. They're going to make it really hard to shoot on public land. They're going to have lead bans, things like that, environmental things, to the point where people who have guns will be less of a gun. They're going to try to make it so people with guns are less of a gun culture and more of, you know, a few million isolated or 100 million isolated islands in America that are marginalized. And the one thing that they could do to really take guns away if they wanted to, and they'll probably do this through the mental health system, through Obamacare, is basically, instead of sending SWAT teams to your house and having 1,000 ruby ridges in America, they'll do something like just make your credit cards not work, you know, to the point where like, you have to come turn in your guns or let the police come in your house. You leave your house, they come in and take your guns, before they'll turn your money back on.
Right.
And
well, you know, Obamacare is a very scary thing, especially now that they're talking about this. I saw on CNN the other day, they were already pushing people in this direction mentally. They had, you know, the sound was off because I was in a restaurant, but the text at the bottom said, said NRA lying about Obamacare. The lobbying group kept gun statistics from being on the Obamacare agenda when the bill was being written. And so it sort of already seems like the media is trying to take a shot at, well, guns are a public health crisis. If we all have to pay for everybody's health care, then of course it's the government's job to decide what people have and don't have, because we have to end up paying for all of these gun deaths and gun wounds. So we need to get rid of them. You know, kind of like the way when I asked a cop back in Washington as a reporter, you know, why does anybody need to wear a seatbelt? What about freedom? And he says, well, because if you get in a wreck and you're not wearing a seatbelt, you have to go to the hospital, and then we all have to pay for it.
You know, that was what
I feel like. That's the tactic they're going to take, is, well, we can't have guns because we can't afford the hospital bills.
And my state rep said the same thing when I asked him about, like, why are you signing this? You know, why are you voting for this thing to ban spice? And he's like, well, I don't really care, and I think people should be able to do whatever they want. But when these little huffers end up in the hospital, we have to pay for it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, what do you think we should stop doing? Paying for it, yeah. You assholes. That seems so obvious and logical. Far too logical for anybody in Congress to comprehend, apparently. And I could say that now because Ron Paul has retired.
So there's a couple things in the chat room here. You want to read from the NRA Facebook what Travis just posted?
Do we need to give them any more press? Lissy, I will, though. Okay. From the NRA Facebook, the NRA attended today's White House meeting prepared to have a meaningful conversation. We were disappointed with how little this meeting had to do with keeping our children safe and how much it had to do with an agenda to attack the Second Amendment. We will not allow law-abiding gun owners to be blamed for the acts of criminals and M.
Yeah. I kind of want Mark in Canada to call in, if he can call in on Skype. He said that they did that in Canada, made it almost impossible to own guns, and he got rid of his. I want to know how that went, if Mark can call in on Skype to Kitty Feet One.
So yeah. We can do calls today. Yeah, you can do Kitty Feet One, or if you've got a regular phone, you can call 307-215-5171.
Yeah, but from Canada, that's a toll call, I think. Yeah. Gun Owners of America is a better org. Yeah, that's true. And that guy was on who's the guy?
Pierce Morgan.
Pierced Penis Morgan last night. Yeah. Pierced Butthole Morgan. Yeah, had him back on. And I did the same thing I did yesterday. We were looking for something to watch, and I went on Pierce Morgan, and DJ went, no. But then she loved it. Because it was what she wanted out of Alex Jones. It was a really coherent conversation. Although it did end with a really calm statement of like, you know, if they try to take our guns away, we're going to shoot. He didn't couch it in those words, but yeah.
Well, and I also you said something to me about the whole Alex Jones on Pierce Morgan thing, that they're trying to kill us. We have no obligation to be polite.
Yeah.
And I think you're really right about that. And that's also kind of what I thought about when you were saying the problem is us. Well, yeah, the problem is us in a sense, but really it's, you know, I hate to do an us and them kind of a thing, but the problem is those masses of people who are okay with the government taking away guns. That's the real problem, is if the politicians think they can get away with it because enough people are sick of semi-automatic weapons and for some reason conflate that with the school shootings, that's the real problem. And I don't think we need to be polite to them. I don't think we need to be polite as they're trying to advocate for our guns to be taken away by gunpoint.
Yeah. This look at this Breitbart link that someone posted. It says, good news. It has become known that hidden deep within the massive 2,800-page bill called Obamacare, there is a Senate amendment protecting the right to keep and bear arms. It says, according to reports, the amendment says, now why according to reports? Can we still not read this? Is it still, we got to wait until it's out? You know, according to reports, why aren't they just citing it? But it says, according to reports, that amendment says the government cannot use doctors to collect any information relating to lawful ownership or possession of firearms and ammunition.
Fiend phone.
All right. We got fiend a phone. Canadian.
Fiend phone.
Is this a Canadian fiend, Mark?
It would be.
Hey, man. Good to finally have you on here. So tell us about guns in Canada.
Rifles and shotguns, not quite so bad. There's still a lot of people who hunt here. But for pistols, it's very difficult. To own them, you need to belong to a club. And as you were saying earlier, ranges are being shut down. Like, they're just stupid little things. I remember there's one club I belonged to where the government came through and just found a list of, you know, just stupid, fiddly little things. Well, fix this, fix that. Yeah, whatever. And then they just find more things. Brittany.
What keeps people from just owning pistols illegally? Because they already know.
You can get them, but pistols are registered. Like down there, as I understand it, you could go to a gun show and just, you know, walk in, pay cash, and, you know, walk out without it being registered, right?
Right. Mm-hmm. In some states. Yeah. In my state. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, it's not even registered here in Texas. When you buy a pistol, you have to pass the FBI check, but it's not like registered.
What
it's
about
like
gun shows there, Nima? Can you buy a gun at a gun show there in Texas without a background check?
Oh, I believe so. I haven't been to one myself, but I think that's what Frank told me when he bought his Makarov that he then lost in a voting accident.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I can go down to the sporting goods store, you know, the place that sells shoes and basketball shorts, and buy a gun. And I do a background check, but it's not registered. It's not like a Texas registration. And
yeah,
I
but the FBI
like
or the ATF has a, you know, basically in America,
they have a thing saying I bought a gun, but they don't have a thing saying I own or possess a gun and keep it.
Or how many guns or which guns. Right. Yeah, but, you know, they have a list. I mean, you and I both have concealed carry permits in different states. So, you know, they have a record of we are gun people, aside from the fact that we're on the internet yelling for a long time about how we're gun people, and now I guess we're trying to backpedal by saying we lost
and having videos of us shooting and sleeping with guns. Yeah.
Sleeping with guns, yeah. So Mark.
Yes.
Guns, Canada.
Well, like I said, with the shotguns, it's rather difficult. Like you said, you can go to a gun show and just buy one and have it, and that's that. Here, yeah, we have that sort of thing, but it's registered. Like, I have to go to the government and get a firearms, what's called a, you know, the PAL, P-A-L, Possession and Acquisition License.
I like how they make it sound friendly. You need a PAL in the government.
Yeah, it didn't feel very friendly, but fill out forms and blah, 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 and then, you know, and send that into to the RCMP, Royal Canadian Mounted Police, and they...
Dudley Do-Right? So Dudley Do-Right knows you have a gun.
Well, yeah, that's about it. So, and then there's one for not what they call non-restricted. That's the long guns, rifles, and shotguns, or restricted for pistols. The pistol one is harder to get, costs more money, blah, blah, blah. And, like, I could drive around my car with, you know, the rifle in the back, in the trunk, you know, not a problem, as long as it's got a trigger lock or in a case, whatever, and you're not loaded, of course. But for for a pistol, you need to belong to a club, and then you get what's called an ATT, Authorization to Transport. And that's literally basically that gives me permission from a straight line drive from straight line to from my house to the club and straight back again. Like, theoretically, I can't even get a cup of coffee on the way. I mean, you know, well,
did you say I can't get a cocktail on the way?
Get a cup of coffee.
Oh, I stop off for a cocktail on my way to the shooting range.
Yeah, that'd be a lot of fun shooting then. Where was I now? Yeah, so there's ATT, Authorization to Transport. Like, it has to be, like, in the trunk or, you know, backseat or something like that, you know, like a locked metal box or something like that. Ammunition in a separate locked box. I think Australia is a very similar thing. They're neutered to the point
theirs is worse.
Oh yeah, okay. I don't know much about theirs, but I've heard a lot of their.
Yeah, and you can't even get a semi-auto, you know, 10-round mag Glock there. You have to have you have to jump through all those hoops and then more to get like a revolver.
Oh wow. Okay. Yeah, we can have. Yeah, we can have 10-round. Yeah, up to maximum 10-round mags in Canada.
So, do criminals have guns there?
Well, of course not. That would be illegal.
but in action, okay, do they?
Seriously? Oh hell yes, absolutely. Yeah. If you think there's what's up in Canada, up in the big blues, yeah, that's fine. You walk around the streets of Toronto and or Montreal in the wee hours of the morning. Yeah, good luck with that. Yes, there's plenty of guns. Yeah, the criminals have no problem getting guns. I jumped through all sorts of hoops to have them, and they just became too damn very difficult. Like it was just time and money that I just couldn't really afford to put in for the hobby.
There's a lot of really beautiful prostitutes working the street in Montreal. I found.
I mean, how do they really enforce all this stuff, though? I mean, fear? If say you had a few pistols already from before this happened. And you were like, well, I'm not going to go get that. I mean, I drove without registering my car for 4 years and didn't get in trouble once for it. I mean, I kind of feel like if it's just a matter of filling out the right paperwork, can't you just not fill out the paperwork? What's the worst that could happen?
Well, I guess it's one of these things that's fine as long as you get away with it. But
right.
I guess that's what I'm asking,
they're not like busting into people's houses, raiding them because their neighbor told on them for having an illegal gun, or does that kind of stuff happen?
I guess it could. Maybe if someone were to spin a good enough story, especially if maybe there's some, prior history on the person, if they're known to be a troublemaker or, with a criminal record or something like that, which would preclude you from ever getting a gun license in the first place.
Right.
But, it's very restrictive, very difficult to do. You're on a list. It's like anytime, basically, if the cops are called to my house, soon as they punch that address in the computer, bing, he comes up. Oh, here's this guy. And oh, shit. It's like not just that, this guy has guns, but I mean, how many, what? Mm-hmm. Like to buy ammo, again, out comes that license every time. And they get, and they got your address and, they want your driver's license and all this
stuff.
See,
there's a lot of people in America. Really? There's a lot of people in America who own guns quietly and really aren't on a lot of those lists. Like there are a lot of people in America who have had guns since they were kids. I guess you could track them through like credit card purchases or something like that. But there are a lot of people that have no government paperwork here of owning guns whatsoever.
I suppose you could do the same thing here. Like you could get one, black market or whatever. And
it's not even black market. You got it from your grandpa or something.
Illegally. Yeah. Well, I guess. I just have an old one that, your grandfather had from years ago and just never, it was something never registered in the first place, so the government doesn't know about it. Or I said, just get one illegally. Don't tell anybody. And yeah, fine if you get away with it, but if you get caught, you are screwed.
Yeah.
And if you, a thing about America too, or anywhere, is if they make it illegal to have guns and you have them and you end up having to use one, someone breaks into your house and you shoot them.
What do you do?
You're going to have a body to dispose of unless your neighbors hear it.
I remember having a discussion at the club one night with the one guy who'd looked into the laws, and I remember he came up with something. I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not sure how accurate this is, but he came up with a scenario where it would be theoretically possible to defend yourself, your home, inside your home in Canada with a firearm, but chances are you're probably going to get charged anyway and then spend, months, years battling in court and tens of thousands of dollars for the lawyers and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. It's like, they make it very difficult. You can't win pretty well. It's very politically incorrect and
that's square, yeah, man. That's so square.
It's scary, well, is what it is.
Generally speaking, in Canada, we don't have, we're not nearly as much of a gun culture as you are in America. And you put on the whole, politically, we're kind of more to the left.
What about Manitoba? America. What about the Wild West of Canada? Alberta.
Yeah, I've never actually been there. I've often had thoughts. There's quite a few people moving out west in Western Canada. That's where all the jobs are these days, the oil fields. It's a little more, very similar from what I understand to, Alberta and Montana border on each other, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So a lot of things, a lot of attitudes and cultures are very similar. Yeah, there's a lot of hunters so like you said, for rifles, shotguns, not so bad, because there's a lot of people hunt up here.
There's a line in the movie Shooter, which part of it takes place in Wyoming, out in the sticks, and there's some government agents on the property in the Wind River Range of the hero of the movie, kind of threatening him on his land. And he's like, you know, they're like, what are you going to do? And he's like, well, I could just shoot you and in a month tell the sheriff about it. And he'd say, good. You know, a thing about that I'm hearing a lot on the crazy gun nut blogs is things that basically, like, you know, if you try to enforce this stuff, it got me really like upset reading some of this stuff last night. It was things like, you know, basically in part of the West, in part of America, in the rural parts of America where the real Americans live, you know, there is not going to be that much compliance of locals working with the feds. And I've even heard things like, you know, you guys, you're going to have a Ruby Ridge in my town, you know, ambulances aren't going to shoot up and ambulances aren't going to show up to help you, kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I believe it.
Well, this is really depressing me, man. Let's talk about something else. Let's talk about you as a kid and how you looked at you now. Let's get off the government.
You know what? You're right. The show was, I mean, it's still a good show, but yeah, the show was going so well. But
we're going to get back there.
Okay.
Right, Nima?
Okay. Well,
right.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing. Buttons! Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get State Speech is Hate Speech, Anarchy Gumbo, Guns and Weed, and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $10 for 5 buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
We'll take the whole psychiatrist tact here. Tell us about your child. Yeah.
Okay, you're not going to get me droned. You're just going to get me locked up, you know, in a rubber room. Yeah.
Yeah.
Both if we're successful.
Yeah. Well, as Michael's probably figured out from some of the email exchanges we've had, I'm definitely, you know, a bit of a weirdo, loner sort of guy. I always have been. Like, I was always the kid, didn't fit in right, hated school, freaking hated it. All I can say is thank God. But I'm 44 years old now. I thank God I'm not a school kid nowadays. I mean, I would have been the kid that would have had me pumped up on every freaking chemical cocktail they could come up with. Yeah, I didn't like it at all. And I just, all I can say about that is, best thing I liked about childhood and the teen years is leaving them behind. Now,
what was so bad? Was it your schoolmates or parents,
school chums,
or teachers,
your pals,
or a little bit of everything?
Well, I had some really excellent teachers, but there were some. Well, I'll put it this way: there's a story I didn't find out about this one until years after the fact. But my parents were called in for an interview with one, and the teacher had said, "No matter how hard I hit him, I can't make him cry." My mother went over the desk, not around the desk, went over the desk. She was going to kill this fucking hag.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Put the cuffing down.
They probably can't do that now. Can they? What? The teacher was hitting you, trying to make you cry?
Yep. Yeah.
Wow. Can they do that now in schools?
I've been in the office and out in the halls. And sorry, what's that, Nina?
Can they do that now in schools? That's Michael.
Not nearly. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought it was Nima. Not nearly so much. Like, teachers are a lot more inclined to get in shit for these kinds of things.
But now they just give them drugs, and isn't that worse? I mean, I would rather have the smack on the bottom that goes away after an hour or two than the brain damage that comes from being pumped full of, you know, drugs for years and years.
Oh, hell yeah. 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 Neither one is particularly good, but of right. the two, yeah. Yeah, quick smack is definitely the lesser evil. No, it's just, I was always the oddball, kind of quiet kid, didn't really fit in that well, it was a hard time making friends. And, you know, I didn't really conform in a world that demands conformity. And it's one of these wonderful things about turning 40 is that it's almost a license to not give a shit what people think anymore. So, yeah, those of you under 40, hey, don't be scared of it, man. It's a good thing.
I mean, I felt like it happened as soon as I got out of high school. I stopped giving a shit about what people thought. And that's the most liberating thing, right? And I think the more that you can get people to do that, the more you have people that love freedom in general. You know, that's the whole thing, is be free in your own life first before you start preaching at other people to be free.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, as I've said, I think in the first email that I sent to Michael, I guess as far as being libertarian, minarchist, anarchist, I mean, I pretty much was my entire life. I just didn't really realize it. Right. I mean, I'd heard of libertarianism before, but it's another flavor of politics. Politics is bullshit and just dismissed it. I didn't really think about it.
How did you come to realize it and recognize it?
Well, it was when I stumbled across your book, User's Guide to the Human Experience, was it called? Yeah. Huh. I just remember Yeah, that one. And I remember, I think you'd said in the chapter, I consider myself libertarian. Like, the truth is, I didn't really expect much from it. What a pretentious, ridiculous title that is. It was on Patio Booth 3. And, you know what? Yeah, seriously. Yeah, so, I owe you a huge apology, Michael.
That's what I was going for.
This is ridiculous. I downloaded it, and I thought, I'll get a few laughs out of this and move on. But, you know, right away in the, you know, don't initiate or accept aggression chapter, I mean, you totally had me. And then later on mentioning, I think you said very specifically, I consider myself libertarian. Huh? What? And so as I said, that was pretty much my red pill to liberty. And I thought, who is this Michael Dean character? And I, you know, started Googling away and Freedom Fiends, what? Bigger? Huh? What?
Nice.
Bigger comment just from the name of the picture. And I had quite a few email discussions with Ben too. So
nice.
Like I said, I guess I was there pretty much my entire life. I just didn't really realize it. And I think there's probably a lot of people in a very similar boat.
Nice. Nice. Well, I'm going to get you off the phone here so I can talk more with Nima about his childhood tender feelings here. But it's really good having you call in, man.
Yeah. Thanks so much. I'm glad we finally spoke.
Thanks for being a
fiend. Don't hesitate to call anytime in the future. You know the routine.
Yep.
Oh, I debated. I just didn't really have anything specifically to say, so I've got to get my Skype working.
Worms.
Okay.
I'm better than my crappy cell phone. Worms.
Worms.
Worms. Please. Cool. Excellent. Well, that was our one call per week that we take.
Yes.
That was good.
Well, we usually get two. We usually get one per live show.
Yeah.
Which is good. You know, when we did our first few shows, there were times when we take like four or five callers, and I don't know, man.
I'd like
to have just one good call, and that way it doesn't break up the flow too much, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So.
Yep.
So good times. I don't know. I guess I get the whole worrying about the government thing, and I sort of understand. You sent me that blog post from Claire Woods back home.
Claire Wolf.
Backwoods home. Yeah, Claire Wolf. I guess for me, though, the thing is, in the solo cast, I sort of talked a little bit about delivering pizzas and being armed or defending yourself, and how people do it anyway, even though all the three big companies, it's against their policy to, you know, allow their employees to carry any weapon, let alone a gun. You can't even have a pocket knife. You can't even have something that could be construed as a weapon. You can't have, there was somebody that put a tent pole in their sleeve when they were going into the ghetto to deliver a pizza. He put a tent pole, you know, something that you would use to build a tent, in his sleeve. And he actually used it to defend himself. And then he was demoted for that because he defended himself. But my statement at the end of that was, you know, I didn't personalize it, but what I said was, in the end, you have to make that calculus of what's more important. Is it more important to follow the rules, or is it more important to continue to live your life? And I feel like that's sort of my statement on on gun controls. Is it more important to follow the rules, or is it more important to continue to live? You guys decide, and it's a rhetorical question, so I think you get what I'm saying there.
I'm looking at the Casper Journal. One of the Prairie Pravdas just came. And there's two articles on the front page, two huge articles. One is, hospitals and legislators argue Medicare. And then there's, Born to Give, Ian Gibson excels to service. And it's about some local air cadet, Army guy, Air Force guy. I mean, that's the media to me. It's like, yeah, politicians argue how to divide up the empire they're forcing you to have, and then something about some brave soldier, you know, that's the newspaper. Although under hospitals and legislators argue Medicaid, here's the Wyoming part of it. It says, the next thing it says is, gun issues raised.
Yeah. Cross out the issues, and that's really the essence of the government. Guns raised and pointed at you.
Yeah. Well, yeah, everything in Wyoming has to have gun issues raised.
Ah, of course. Of course.
Yeah. But I'm trying to find what they're saying about guns and Medicare.
What you should fear from the politicians, though, is what they don't discuss. Because what the Republicans and Democrats aren't arguing about is what they agree on already. Jeff Tucker wrote a really great article on this recently about the payroll tax, because during the whole fiscal cliff nonsense and what are we going to do about this, you know, people bitched and moaned about this tax increase, that tax increase. Barely ever was it mentioned that the payroll tax was going to go up, because both the Democrats and the Republicans had already agreed to it. So everybody's bitching and moaning now about how all their checks are lower, because pretty much everybody in the country has a lower check, and they can see it, and they're complaining about it, and they're like, what the hell? I didn't know this was going to happen. It's because the media didn't cover it, because the Democrats and the Republicans didn't argue about it. So be more wary of what they're not arguing about.
And then there's some puppy parade article about some local wedding photography company, and it shows these, you know, two plump Wyoming types in front of their truck with their mini DV cameras. And I'm like, mini DV cameras, dude, you're so outdated.
Yeah. I was looking through the junk drawer at my dad's house when I was there for vacation last week, and he had like a mini DV camera, and I was like, whoa, a blast from the past. And he's like, you want that? And I'm like, I don't really know what I'd do with it.
I know. I mean, I remember when the only thing I wanted in my life to make it complete was a mini DV camera.
Yeah.
And I never actually bought a good one. I always just got other people to film for me for free. And then I actually got a really cheap one, and we ended up duct taping it to a Mosin Nagant to get a bullet's eye view for the movie.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so they are good for something.
Yeah, they're good for being expendable.
It's so hilarious because, I'm sitting there looking at this mini DV camera in a junk drawer. My dad's like, you want that? And I'm thinking, I have a higher quality video camera in my pocket right now that's also my cell phone.
Yeah, I know.
And it's kind of sad. It's because it's like, you know, some company spent years and years developing that, and my dad spent a bunch of money buying it and thought, oh, this is top of the line shit, man. This is like a clock radio DVD VCR, man. A few years later, it's like worthless. It's just a piece of plastic and metal.
Yeah, I remember the calculator my dad bought for $700 when they first came out.
What? Really? Wow, you're older than I thought.
Yeah, that was in about 1975, probably.
Of course, back then it was cheaper than buying the slave labor from the Chinese calculator.
Yeah, it was a Texas Instruments, and it used Nixie tubes instead of LEDs. You know, those they're Nixie actually like tubes. Vacuum tubes that have like illuminating numbers in them.
Really?
Yeah, Nixie tubes.
I don't think I've seen those. I'm going to look those up.
Yeah, they're kind of cool, man. Look up, search Nixie tubes there on the Nixie tubes.
I do like tubes. I was in the bookstore the other day. Oh, wow, that's the coolest thing ever.
Yeah.
I'm looking at Nixie tubes right now. I want one. I want multiple.
Orgasms.
Nixie tube clock. Yeah, put those.
Someone said, I'm such a tube nerd. Neem and I are. We are actually both talking through tubes right now.
Yes. Put some tube pictures up on the interwebs for people to see.
I don't know. Let's see. Check out the Metasonics fucker. What is that, man? I don't know what that is.
I sent you a picture the other day.
Radio.
I was in a bookstore, and there was a book called Tubes. It was about the internet. It's called Tubes, A Journey to the Center of the Internet by Andrew Bloom. I kind of wanted to read it. Apparently, it's about how the internet actually works. Like in the blurb or in the description, it's like, well, we all use the internet all the time and it's really important, but not many people actually know how it works. So if something happened to it, we would want to know how to, you know, invent a new internet or fix the internet. So here's how.
I like where the term Nixie came from. It's a Burroughs Machine Company abbreviation for Numeric Indicator Experimental Number 1, Nixie.
Oh, number one. Yeah, that's sexy. I love computer acronyms. They're so much better than government acronyms, aren't they?
Oh, look at this Nixie watch on the wrist of Steve Wozniak, co-founder of Apple.
Wozniak. Okay, you can put it on here.
That thing, see, it's on there.
Telefunken tubes. I like that.
Telefunken.
Choice.
Yeah.
Telefunken.
Yeah, that's an old Nazi microphone company. I just posted. Look at this picture, man. It's awesome. It's giant.
Okay, I'm gonna look at this picture.
Steve. Yeah. Yeah, he just has one because it's old, like him.
I want to go to there.
Yeah, I want to go to there. Tubes. We are a tube-based economy here in Wyoming. And
you guys
are. So I guess we could talk a little more about how we're going to be on radio. We can't say with who, but...
Well, I got one more thing on tubes.
Okay. I'm going to go throw this newspaper away while you talk about tubes.
So yeah, I sent Michael that picture of tubes. He goes, nice. You reading it? And I said, nah, just came across it at the quote-unquote bookstore, which is kind of like an analog version of the internet. I haven't been to a bookstore in ages, and this place is like three stories tall. It's called Book People. It's in Austin. It's like where they have all the book signings because it's huge. It's like the bookstore. And I was just it was so fun and interesting to go and peruse all these different thoughts and ideas and books and pictures. And I'm like, but this is what I do when I'm at home. It's like I'm at the bookstore, except instead of picking up pieces of dead trees, I'm clicking on tabs and perusing with digits and zeros and ones. And
clicking on live trees that are connected like lingerie throughout the world, like, in a network
when
that's not
square.
We were
in Utah, and my dad was showing us these old photo albums, you know, of us when we were kids and him when he was in his 20s and had his big aviator glasses and his mustache and his gold chains. And Frank put his two fingers on one of the pictures and spread them apart like it was going to zoom in. And he's like, what the hell am I doing?
Really?
It doesn't work that way.
That's funny. Yeah, that's funny.
It is, man.
Nixie tubes are sexy, man. They're so weird.
They are. So we were going to talk about other things, right?
What was that? We were going to talk about you know, the let's wrap up in a circadian rhythm here of us as young people looking at us as old people. So I guess we could talk a little about how we're going to be on radio. That was my dream when I was a kid.
I'm surprised we didn't talk about that for the whole episode because you're obsessed. You called me last night. We talked about it for like 3 hours.
Did I irritate you by doing that?
No.
Did I irritate you by calling you up and saying, Nima, let's talk about this wonderful worldwide counter far over America opportunity I have found for us?
No, of course it did not irritate me. I just like to say that.
I know.
But it was funny. It was funny.
I was very proactive. What was funny about it?
How excited you were. You were like a little kid.
Yeah, I want to be on radio right now. Not
that you shouldn't
February.
Be, but it was just, it's funny to see a grown man get as excited as a kid before Christmas.
I
guess funny is not the wrong word because it's a good feeling. It makes you feel good about the world. I don't even know the word for it, but it made me feel good.
Well, it's all I wanted for Christmas because I actually... a friend of ours who works in radio introduced us to this guy, gave us an email introduction and a recommendation basically saying, yeah, you should have their show before Christmas. And of course, everything shuts down before Christmas.
Yeah.
And I, you know, waited the right number of days. I called him on like the 8th of the month when people are starting to get back to work and looking through their emails and talk to them about it. And basically it's this national kind of clearinghouse for talk radio shows is going to pick us up and add us, which will make us available to actual radio shows across the country. And, you know, kind of like what Alex Jones has and Free Talk Live and people like that. And I'm not allowed to say the name of the company until it's, until we've signed stuff with them, but it's happening. And then we have to get on the phone and call, program directors and pitch us to them. But I think it'll work because we are, one of about three out of the 60 or so shows that this, clearinghouse kind of thing takes. We are about one of three that anybody under 60 would want to listen to, probably.
What's the term you used? Or it's the industry term.
Youth skewing.
Youth skewing. Which is
not the same as youth skewering, but we are skewering the youth's brains, the utes.
Right. Yeah. The utes. Yeah. And when you first said it, I was like, what is a ute? And we sort of recreated that scene from My Cousin Vinny.
Ute.
I was like, man, I can't tell what you're talking about with the Eastern accent.
Did you really think I said ute?
I couldn't understand what you were saying. Yeah, it sounded like ute or ute.
See, I don't think I have an Eastern accent. I believe that I have no accent, but...
Say youth. Really? Say it now. Say youth.
Youth. The youth will have their say.
Okay. I guess it worked that time. All right. Maybe it was just a cell phone connection, but I didn't know what the hell you were talking about. Youth skewing. And I just thought, how awful of a term. Like, because, if anything else, no youth would ever use that term ever. So it's like oxymoronic to say this is positioning itself towards the youth and then use a word to describe that no person under 25 would ever use in the world ever.
Yeah, it's like saying we are going to monetize youth skewed paradigms of interconnected. I can't even do it. I can't even fake that kind of synergy. Just synergy.
Throwing a bunch of buzzwords out there, hoping the pitch will stick.
Yeah.
But you said you did a Google search, and that's the industry term. Whenever a program director is looking for something for that demo, they use that frickin' buzzword, youth skewing.
I just saw a squirrel jump. Like, it's on the ground looking for nuts. It's buried. And it
maybe we should change it to squirrel skewing.
It's
that's
jumping.
More
it's
accurate.
It is, man. The squirrel's like jumping, and it just like it just went in a 360-degree circle about a half foot off the ground. Like, it just went up and spun and then went back down. I don't
maybe
know,
it
man.
Saw its best worm friend and they're about to make a squirm.
A squirm. So did you see the picture of the squirm yet?
I did, yes. It's very
like
squirm-like.
It? Yeah. It's kind of tribble-like, if people know the
I was doubtful tribble. that it could do justice for the squirm, but it does. It looks like one big blob, you know, like one straight line like a worm, but
with
then it's
no
covered
eyes.
In cat hair. No eyes. No head. So it's a squirm.
It's actually fuzzy with just some bad Photoshop removing his face.
Yeah.
But it's pretty funny.
Ah, speaking of cats with no face, have you seen Chase No Face?
No, what's that?
It's a cat who like had its face burned off or its face somehow
I don't want to hear about
destroyed
that,
in a bad accident. But somebody adopted it and it's become a very lovely cat and they love it.
I'm not going to look
for that.
It's got a website.
It's heartwarming.
Heartwarming. It's
heartwarming.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support only a phone call away 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
Doug, I'm so sick of looking at Steve's wedding pics, and I'm all out of passive-aggressive comments. What else am I supposed to do at work all day?
Sick of stalking your ex on Facebook?
Yeah!
Are you all out of cute cats and autocorrect mishaps to lolat?
Duh!
Freedom Fiends to the rescue! The Fiends now have a blog. Read all about the latest tyranny today. Dream about lip pair. Laugh while Western civilization collapses. Just click on the cat icon to the right of freedomfiends.com. Freedom Fiends blog. Read it!
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon. Your
house is your property. I'm going to put an image in the chat room. You don't have to look at it.
I have to if it's there. I'll look at it. All right. So we're going to talk more about, about when can we expect you to be on the radio? Middle of February. And we're talking like, you know, we're not talking community radio like, you know, pirate or anything like that. We're talking like.
We're already on that kind of stuff.
We're talking like you get in your car, you know, in a major metropolitan area, turn on the radio, and we're going to be there Saturdays from 2 to 4.
Yelling at statists about how square they are.
I know.
Yeah. Travis wants to know about prepper stuff, apparently.
Oh, this cat's horrible, man.
Don't call it horrible. You hurt its feelings.
Can it see?
Yeah, I think it can see. It's a lovely cat, just like any other cat. Just because it has no face doesn't mean
you're I know. You have a one-eyed dog, so you're used to that kind of stuff.
Yeah, man. Cats deserve love, too, even if they have no face.
Will it work in a truck? Yeah, it'll work in a truck. I mean, what we have to do is we have to get on the stations once we're available to the stations, but it shouldn't be a problem. We should be able to get some stations. People don't like your cat, man. They're really mad at you.
I'm disappointed in you, fiends. Show some love. Yes, it's an ugly cat, but I bet it gives lots of good pets.
Oh, yeah.
Gets lots of good pets. Yeah.
I'd keep a cat if it was, you know, looked weird.
Yeah, if your cat got its face burned off, you wouldn't just throw it in the dumpster, would you?
No. Although, you know, I think there are situations where you make a decision for the life of the pet. You know, DJ had a cat that was having it was diabetic. At like age 10, it developed diabetes, and basically they were like, okay, you can spend several thousand dollars on more tests, and then what will probably happen is you will have to poke this cat 3 times a day and test its blood sugar and then give it injections before and after meals for the rest of its life, or you can put it down. And she chose to put it down, and I think that was the wise decision, man. I don't think a cat doing that is going to have a good life, you know?
Yeah, but this cat's not like that. It just has no face. It's just ugly. It's not like it causes them any extra work. It's just ugly.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, let's move on, man. Nobody likes you, and nobody likes what you said. So
nobody
let's
doesn't
move on.
Like me.
Nobody doesn't like you anymore. So let's talk about tying it back together here. You know, let's do the full circle thing. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I don't know, man. Ask me a question then. You got to foment those juices after you.
I got to foment
you guys
your juices.
Stoned my faceless cat to death. You got to do something.
Okay.
You got to fluff me again.
All right. You know, really, the wrong turn we took was discussing the government. The first hour of this was one of the best casts we've ever done, and I think I'm going to make most of the promo for our radio show from the first hour of this.
Yeah, it was a good first hour. Yeah.
But then we talked about the government. We talked about guns. And
so what you want to do now is you want to tie our youth back to our adulthood? Is that what you want to do?
Yeah.
Our consciousness?
Yeah.
Our youth consciousness?
Yeah, we spent the first hour looking back at us as children, looking forward to us as adults. Let's do the opposite now.
Well, I feel like I'm in a good place right now. Like, I'm in the middle, right? I'm not old and the establishment yet. I don't think you are either, Michael. But
I'm youth skewing.
You're youth skewing, but I'm youth still.
Yeah, keep telling yourself that. No, Frank is youth. You're You're 30 almost, man. How old are you? 28, 29?
28. Yeah, I still consider until you're 30, you're still
How
youth.
Old were you when I met you? 26?
Yeah, 26. Yeah.
Man, that's young. Like, yeah, literally, man. You were born in 84, right?
1984.
My daughter was born in 84. You know, yep. You're like, yep. It's weird that we're really good friends. I'd say best friends, but I don't know if you call me your best friend, but I'll call you my best friend.
Yeah, you're my friend. Best friend.
Am I really?
My best friend.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Yeah. And I wasn't fishing for that, but you've never said that. You've never said that, and recently you said you love me, which you'd never said. So we're getting really to the point of no homo here. But, you know, when you get older, you can say that kind of stuff, I guess, without sounding homo.
I guess. I kind of think it's a girl thing. Like, that's something on Pretty Little Liars, this little chick show my wife's been watching. This girl was all like, are you even my friend anymore? And I'm like, wow, do girls really say that to each other? Like, is that a thing? Do people say that?
Yeah.
Yes, they do. And that's kind of like what you're saying now. Are you my best friend, Nima? Check yes or no.
Well, I didn't ask. You said it. And I wasn't fishing for it. And it's good to hear it.
I'm just fucking with you. I'm fucking with you.
Yeah.
I
kind of wish we lived in the same city.
Here's the point I was making, though, is that I feel like the big difference between the youth and the oldies or the establishment is the youth don't have as much of a vested interest in the status quo. They're not rich yet. They don't take vacations to Hawaii on their own accord. Their parents buy them vacations to Hawaii. They don't have big businesses.
Who?
This is the youth. The youth.
The youths?
Anybody young. The youths, yeah.
Youths.
Most
youths.
I mean, you have your Mark Zuckerbergs and whatever, and there's a few of those, but the youth don't benefit from the system working the way it does. And so they're more likely to see the holes in the system, to see the inconsistencies and to see the BS and call it out and call for it to change because they don't want to come up in that same world that their parents came up in. So I feel like I'm still kind of a part of that part of the youth to where I don't have a vested interest in the status quo. I'm not saying, well, we need cops because then my businesses get protection from the cops and it's good.
I feel more powerful in a way and then more powerless in a way than I ever have. More powerful in that I am completely happy in my life for, you know, probably the first time in my life. Like, and it didn't even happen when I got married. It was on its way when I got married, but pretty much the last 3 or 4 years, pretty much since I became a libertarian, it kind of coincided with, but it also kind of was the cause of me finally being at peace with feeling good in the world and feeling like I found my place in the world. But at the same time, I am more aware now that powers outside my control could throw me in a, could, you know, the two things I fear the most are basically being thrown in prison for things that are currently legal and should always be legal, or, you know, politricksters collapsing the economy to where all the hard work of my life is useless.
Yeah.
To where they just take it by remote control. And right. Both of those are on the table. Both those things are on the table daily now.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. But I feel okay because I feel like in those situations and in a collapse, I feel like I'm free enough in myself, in my personality, in the man who I am to work through it and still live through it and still prosper. That's why I feel powerful is because I feel like I'm under the boot of no man, at least not willingly. My mind is free. And the only way you do that to get rid of that from controlling my body is the guillotine. And I feel like I'm decent enough at avoiding guillotines for at least the near-term future to make myself feel safe. You know, that's what I'm saying. When I was a kid, I didn't feel free. I felt imposed upon by parents and institutions and church and school and society. But now I don't feel like I'm a part of that establishment. Instead, I'm in this great middle part where I feel like I'm not beholden to any of these established interests and I'm my own person. And that makes me feel free. And as a result, that makes me feel powerful too.
Nice. Somebody just posted two really nice cat pictures of a cat that has a face. What I would call a unicorn chaser. Unicorn chaser is something pleasant and light and fun that you look at after looking at something horrible. You have a chaser to follow it. You never heard
right,
that?
Right. It's a back.
I think that it's like the chaser of soda you have after the, you know, shot of straight whiskey. And a unicorn chaser is like a picture of a pretty unicorn that you look at after looking at, you know, something horrific. Cat is kind of angry in one of these pictures and cranky. But it's
Only thing I chase my whiskey with is more whiskey. So if you need that, good for you. But
You carry two in the chamber.
Then I carry two.
I chase my whiskey with whiskey, and I carry two in the chamber.
Yes. Travis chases with eye bleach.
Eye bleach? Oh, I. I thought it was I, like cat. The letter I. Like, yeah. You know, the new like Apple bleach.
I and I bleach.
The I and iPod.
That's great. Has that been a thing yet? We got to invent that. The I and iPod.
Probably. I don't know.
An iPod that plays only reggae and hates gay people.
No, it just plays Bible verses from the Old Testament. You smoke your pot and then you listen to your Bible verses.
I see. No, I and iPod does not come up on a Google search.
Well, there.
Put it in quotes.
Trademark.
I think that's a very clever. We'll trademark it. I should wrap that in a rap lyric on the I and iPod.
I like it. You can have it. I think you should also rap, I chase my whiskey with whiskey. Why don't you say that clearly without me talking over it so we can use it in the promo?
I chase my whiskey with whiskey.
And I carry two in the chamber.
Oh, okay. I chase my whiskey with whiskey and I carry two in the chamber.
Say it again.
I chase my whiskey with whiskey. And I carry two in the chamber.
Yes, you do.
All right.
That is so not square.
According to... No, somebody has said Ion iPod. Apple hasn't invented the Ion iPod for Rastafarians was a blog post on whydoyouhategod.com.
Hey, Travis, are these your cats? These are... The first picture before the cat is screaming really looks a lot like my cat Peanut, like a little more mature. If Peanut hadn't been snipped as young as he was, you know, if with male cats, if you really want them to have manly, like tiger like faces like this, you don't snip them until a year. But our cats were snipped at like 8 weeks or something.
Yeah.
Which is really kind of sad. It's like, you know, you barely get balls and then they cut them off.
Yeah. I've always found that really sad. The two things about modern animal practices, or a few things I find, is mutilation in general of your pets I find very sad. Declawing of cats saddens me. Neutering of animals saddens me. And even euthanasia or killing your, you know, putting your cats and dogs down, that saddens me. People call me naive for it.
Shooting wolves saddens you. Would you never have a pet put down? I mean, would you let it suffer?
I mean, I haven't been in a position to make that call yet, so I don't judge anybody else on them doing it because, you know, I'm libertarian and all that. But if it were solely up to me, I don't know if I would. Maybe I'd just let it die itself. I don't know.
I don't know, man. I mean, if a pet's got cancer or something horrible that's really, it's just living in constant pain, it's the right thing to do to put it down.
Maybe. I kind of like nature to take its course, though. Maybe I'm just a hippie. I don't want to be the one killing my dog. And I if it was me, maybe I'd feel a little bit more different about it.
Do we really want to end with this? We got about 30 seconds here.
Do we? Well, we can go a little bit longer. It's our own show.
No, we can't. Okay. I got another. Right. I really can't because I have to edit this, and get it up, and then I have an interview an hour from now.
For the gumbo.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I just want to say that the state does prevent the proper way of doing these things because you have to take it to a vet and then have the vet kill your animal.
Obama's death panels for grandma? Yeah.
Yeah, for kitty.
Yeah.
Obama's death panels for Fido. All right. Anything else you want to say?
No, just we went some really good places with this, and it's kind of sad that we had to interrupt it with talking about the government, which is what the podcast is usually about, but I like to do more of these where we just talk about,
you know,
what we'd talk about if there were not a government. You know,
well, live it was more brief, and live there. We went good places with it, and
we went to Canada with it.
It's fine. We went to Canada on that ass.
Yeah.
Yes, and learned what it's all about.
And we saw where they want to take it. That's where the Americans want to take it, is Canada.
I sure hope not.
Brave new Canada world.
Here is the outro.
1980 Canada.
We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.
Thank you for listening to the Freedom Fiends Agenda. We'll be back streaming live every Thursday from 4 to 6 p.m. East Coast U.S. time on Freedom Fiends Radio at freedomfiends.com. MP3 archives of all Freedom Fiends episodes are available free at freedomfiends.com. That's FreedomFiends.com. Worms.